everybody. It's another edition of Cover to Cover. It's Rob Naylor joining you here with Chris Z. What's up, Chris?
What's up, Rob?
Hey, buddy. Hey. I have a magazine to read.
Well, I would hope so. This is what the show's about.
Yeah. I picked one from 1987, and I said I was going to do 86, but I lied.
Doesn't really matter.
It really doesn't. I picked the Pro Wrestling Illustrated from February 1987, and it's got all the UWF guys fighting over a trophy on it, and it's the PWI $50,000 Challenge Tournament. Who is the best in the UWF? Here it is. So
that's one of the most memorable covers of that era, too.
No doubt. Very memorable cover. A very rare cover that's not a WWF or NWA guy. Or like world class.
Yeah.
Probably one of the only Watts covers I would imagine for Pro Wrestling Illustrated, if we're being honest.
Think about it, yeah. Because I think the DiBiase cover was after he signed with WF. But it's usually a Watts photo. Watts era photo of DiBiase.
Yeah, there might have been a Mid-South DiBiase cover, but as far as UWF goes, I think this was the only one.
Yeah, right.
There's a press conference with Magnum TA, and it's Hogan versus Hogan versus Orndorff, or Orndorff, as I said at the time. It's wrestling's hottest feud, and they ain't lying with that headline. That feud drew a lot of money. Color pinup, Randy Savage and Elizabeth. That color pinup is no longer in the magazine because I used to rip them all out. So
hey, I did the same exact thing, brother. I think I showed you the pinups I had where all the whole – the thumbtack holes were in them. I was tacking to the wall.
No doubt. So it's not in here. So if you're, you know, holding out for that discussion on the pinup, we're not going to have it. So you open this thing up, and it says, "I tried for years to gain weight." And it says, "Big muscles in 7 days." And Charles Atlas photos. And, you know, so it's a fucking wonder we all didn't have body dysmorphia with all these muscular people we were admiring and then gaining weight and being a muscle man, all these fucking things in these magazines. God bless
every one of them for all those years. I mean, even when I started buying the magazines from the 50s and the 60s, that was in there then.
Man, I wonder how much money these people made. It's fascinating to me. Send me 30 tablets for $7.95. There
you
go.
They were safe.
Yeah, no doubt. Low cost way. Stop wasting money.
FDA approved, I'm sure.
Yes. And the guy's got a nice hairy chest. Wonderful. Okay, so we're passing this along now. We're going to go the between falls section. And it's got – they would go like a couple months back or the last issue and talk about it. And the last issue had Dusty Rhodes on it with the world title. And it had Flair and Animal and Nikita and Magnum and R&R and Baby Doll on the front. By the way, I got to find this magazine. I want this magazine.
I got that magazine.
I have it too, but the cover is goddamn destroyed beyond oblivion, so I wouldn't even know where it would be.
That's the one I got off eBay. I mean, one of the purchases I got and one of the buys. And yeah, I never had that originally, so I was happy to get that one.
Yeah, I had it originally, and I absolutely love the cover with Dusty with the belt because he didn't have it too long. So it's kind of cool. 2 weeks, indeed. I remember he lost it on my birthday on August 9th, which fucking sucks. But I didn't know that at the time. Thank God.
Me and you both, remember?
Yeah, you're right. And then he won it on July 26th, which I remember for some – I don't know whose birthday that is, but fuck it. I do remember that date. They're talking about – the magazine and what do we got here? The one guy's talking about all the different bashes and $50 for a ringside seat's too much and all this other stuff. And then somebody else from Ben Salem, PA, he was
ECW he was stronghold in Salem, PA.
What's that?
ECW stronghold in Salem, Pennsylvania.
And he called it the cover jinx. Because by the time that magazine came out, Dusty, of course, had lost the title. So I think that happened with Kerry, too, which this guy's pointing out. So, oops. Probably Tommy Rich, too. Fuck him. those three-month AWA and NWA title changes. If you were Japanese, you were fucked because you would win the belt and you were not going to have that shit by, like, next month for sure. All right. What else we got here? Someone enjoys world class. Oh, no, he's calling WWF a Class A organization, since they now have Harley Race recognizing such, and Dick the Rebel Slater, Jake the Snake Roberts, and Billy Jack all making their way to WWF. And then he says, as for the circus, just take a look at clowns like Ric Flair, Jimmy Boogie Boogie Man Valiant, Steve Dr. Death Williams. Wait, what? That doesn't even make sense. Whoever called Dr. Death a clown, I don't really understand that.
Call him that to his face.
Yeah, right. Holy shit. Interesting. So, yeah, this guy was a diehard person caping for WWF back in 1986. So.
Well, hey.
Bless his heart. Hey, that, yeah, good for him.
I mean, there's tribalism in wrestling fans today. There's tribalism in wrestling fans in the 90s, in the 80s. It's been that way forever, folks. It's way
forever. It just seems like there's way more of them now, though. I don't know.
I think a lot of it these days is there's more of a medium to do it than there ever was before with social media and stuff. And you got the instantaneous shit talking, which, you know, back in these days, I mean, basically, you have to write a letter to the new magazine. So if some guy's writing a letter bashing one promotion, then somebody that's a fan of that promotion is going to write a letter back. Then it appears like 2 issues later. And it's just a back and forth that takes months, you know. Yeah. Now it takes seconds. So
the whole writing thing. And not only does it take seconds, it's a lot less thought put in. You're not writing
exactly
a letter. Exactly. You're talking very quickly and putting out a tweet. But anyway, speculation that former world-class champion Rick Rude will get a shot at NWA world champion Ric Flair has all but ceased. As upon arriving in the NWA, Rick Rude has aligned himself with number one Paul Jones, a move that virtually eliminates any chance he has of getting a shot at Flair. Always enjoyed this kind of thing because – even as kids, we just knew bad guys weren't going to wrestle bad guys, and the magazines kind of played that up too.
Well, the interesting thing with that one is, okay, you may remember this. All right, in early '87, when Bull and Rude were tag champions, Rude would openly go after the Horsemen in promos on television, and I mean he would talk shit on Flair and Tully, and I mean he was. If you didn't know better, you're thinking they're setting something up here. Bull would have something to say, and then there would be times that Flair would come out and he would have a little retort, and you're thinking, okay, they're building something here. We're going to get some heel versus heel stuff. It never happened. It's basically these guys were just shooting their own angles, basically, and talking shit. And Rude and Flair didn't have the best relationship, so that's what it was. But
wow, the bull didn't like anyone either.
Yeah.
He even shit on Arn on his shoot. Well, he talks shit on everybody on his shoot interview.
Oh, yes, he does.
Yeah. Manny hated Flair. He thought he was a weak guy who could lose in a shoot. Manny obviously hated Tully for reasons we've probably gone over times before. And then Ole is just an asshole to everybody generally. So, like, Manny didn't like him either. But that would have been sick if Rude and Manny ended up getting a run with you know, Flair and Lex or something. I don't know. I think it would have been cool because I don't think Ric Flair ever had a single match with Manny Fernandez, which is
– he did.
When you think of people – he did?
On house shows.
Ooh. Yeah. I would have guessed that Flair never would have been in the ring with Manny out of fear that Manny would shoot on
him. It wasn't many. I'd say probably less than 5, but it happened.
In 84, 85? When would that have been?
85.
Hmm. Yeah. 85. Interesting. I enjoy watching those matches. I think they would probably gel.
They were house shows in the Carolinas. Yeah, I think smaller house shows, not the major market shows, but yeah.
I think Manny Fernandez has more matches I want to see unearthed than any other wrestler on the planet. We did find the Barbarian match recently on the network, which is wonderful. But
yeah, I mean, yeah, Manny's one of those guys where he wasn't, you know, pushed as a main player, but he was a guy who was very credible and you could believe anything he was doing because of how he presented himself and the way he worked in the ring. So he's like a cult favorite in that way.
He's my cult favorite. The next page, King's Court.
Peter King. Yes.
From Sports Illustrated. Maybe not. I don't know.
Who knows?
Was it the same one? We don't know.
I don't think so, but you never know. It could be.
Yeah, I wonder if he was a real person. You never know with these fucking magazines. Okay, so this here has – he's looking at the state of wrestling Trouble in Ganya City with the AWA. The ESPN show's a huge embarrassment, and crowds are down throughout the AWA, deservedly so. Talent's painfully thin, with only Scott Hall, Jimmy Snuka, and the Midnight Rockers showing any sign of being world-class. As we go to press, rumors circulating, Michaels and Jannetty are contemplating moving elsewhere. Picture Nick Bockwinkel with the title, which I really like that AWA title after it got run over by the car and they gave Bockwinkel another one. I like that belt. But Bockwinkel looks like a fucking senior citizen in every way here.
Well, you know what that belt is, right?
What is it?
That belt. Vern had that belt specially made for himself.
Oh, are you kidding me?
All right. Do you remember a book? I'm talking about this one with 20 Sheets for. You remember the book? There was this book that was sold in bookstores called Matt Wars. It was AWA. It's a Pro Wrestling USA book because it featured AWA, NWA guys, and Pro Wrestling USA guys. Like little profiles of all these different wrestlers. And you remember this? It's a big book. It came out in 85, 86.
If I saw a photo of who was on the cover, if it was like the Fabulous Ones,
it was
or somebody.
Different. It was a bunch of little pictures of different people.
Yeah,
Road like Warriors, Jimmy Garvin.
In that book.
Yeah, Vern. The picture of Vern in that book is of him after he retired in his trunks with that belt around his waist.
Wow.
So he had that belt made for him, I guess, after he retired to be his World Heavyweight Championship belt. And then when Hansen, you know, took the belt with him, you know, and ran over it and whatever, you know, then Vern needed a title. So they decided to use that title, which ended up, you know, Lawler ended up keeping, you know, as the AWA champion. And when he didn't send the belt back to Vern, when they stripped him of the title, he kept it and basically retired it because the CWA had already made the unified World Heavyweight title belt. But then when the Snowman wins that title and he decides to do what he does and leaves and quits, basically, he takes the belt with him. So Lawler has to break up the old AWA title out of retirement and use it as the unified title.
Wow. That's crazy. I thought that Zbyszko was the last one. So Zbyszko got a different belt, huh?
Yes.
Wow, I never knew that. Huh. I love this AWA belt. It's unfortunate that it's just unfortunate that basically it ended up being like a second tier belt with the unified belt.
I mean,
and
it became
like
a replacement belt twice.
So does Lawler still have it?
Yes.
Who knows?
As far as I know, yes.
Interesting. I like that belt. That belt in the Power Ranger, my favorite. Bill Watts promotion in Lean and Hungry. Boasts excellent talent and very competitive matchups. And which is why PWI decided to sponsor a tournament with the UWF. I like the way they brought all that together. It does lack a mainstream bona fide superstar like Magnum TA or Hulk Hogan, which I kind of get. Also lacks a network or cable TV contract. You know, when I would read these stories back in the day, I didn't give a shit about any of this stuff. It's just so funny how much it resonates now as I read it, where it's like, oh, they do need a cable TV contract.
Well, it was mainly a tournament that was in Houston. I mean, that was the main thing about it. I mean, they had some tournament matches on television, but everything, the main stuff happened in Houston. So, yeah.
Hey. I know everyone's all yay, rah, rah, NWA this week, but God, let's hope Billy Corgan puts that shit out again like the other guy did.
Yeah, he's got everything. It's there.
Yeah. I didn't appreciate that service until it was gone.
Well, here's the thing now is pretty much everything that aired on that is on YouTube now for free.
We're going to talk after the show, Chris. Oh, wow, that's amazing. That's awesome. Good. Good.
That's all I got to say.
Holy shit. World Class. It seems hard to believe just 2 short years ago, World Class was competing with the NWA and WWF as the top spot. But now it's been not faring well.
I'll say.
Oh, no. It says recently the Texas-based promotion has been faring as well as its Texas ancestors did against the Mexican army at the Alamo. Fucking stupendous. So strengths of World Class, of course, is also its main weakness, the Von Erichs, which is kind of rare for them to take a shot at the Von Erichs in this magazine. This in like 87. Mike's has this near fatal illness. Carrie's still out of action. And Kevin, obviously. Oh, one thing we did say on the other day on that other podcast I did. Gentleman's favorite is Kevin Von Erich. Not my favorite. I like David. But like now that I think about it, I think I do like Kevin more in the ring than Carrie.
They all
imagine a Stan Hansen Kevin Von Erich match. Right? Because Kevin was so there with everything he did. Yeah. And Hansen was Hansen. So, like, I think that would have been, like, the best shoot fight in the world.
It would have been a definite potato fest. I mean.
Oh, no doubt.
And that's the – David was the complete wrestler of the three. Kevin was the guy who was the hardest hitting of the three. And Carrie was the more dynamic of the three. So each of them were different in their own way, which was great that they all stood out in different ways like that and wasn't trying to be each other, basically.
Yeah. Absolutely. They all had their own little detail. Okay, now they're talking about world class. How dare they take a talent like Bam Bam Bigelow from the Mid-Southern region and turn him into Crusher Yurkov? Yes. Goddamn Yurkov.
Hated that gimmick.
Oh, it was the worst. I like Larry Sharp is the manager in World Class. It's pretty funny. Yeah. Just also, World Class has entered into a booking agreement with the WWF with Ricky Steamboat scheduled to appear on the Cotton Bowl show. Interesting how that George came and Scott. Went, too, because he did do the show. Yeah, did it and then left. Yeah,
George Scott. I mean, but you look at it, though. I mean, look at World Class late in 86. You have, Master G coming in. You got Tony Atlas coming in, and there's some guys who had been in WWF, just been in WWF, and now they come in the World Class. So there was something there. And George Scott, had left WWF. He was where he was the head booker and went to World Class. So there was a little bit there, a little connection.
Do you have a favorite Master G match?
Favorite Master G match? Had to be Butch Reed in Mid-South.
That would be you. No? Okay. Yeah, I can't think of anything off the top. I was a giant George Wells fan, though, believe it or not. I liked all the losers in WWF that would almost win.
So oh, you talking George about Master Wells? I mean, because he was Master G in Mid-South with George Wells before he had all his problems. And then, of course, when he was Master G in World Class, I mean, he was coked out at that point in time.
Well, I was about to say, I don't know anything about any of his problems, but okay, I didn't know that. Is he still alive?
I don't know, yeah.
Oh my God, Chris! Someone's got to do a Master G shoot interview. Well, I would love it.
He would have some stories because I mean, his start in the business came when he was a football player in Canada, and he just started wrestling in the Canadian promotions, in the off season. And
100%.
He worked 100%. Everywhere. So I mean, he worked for pretty much every territory at least once. So
that's what I like. I'd like to hear about what he'd have to say because again, he was in the WWF at its apex, pretty much. He was in World Class for a cup of coffee, Mid-South, like you said. I only really remember him from WWF and a little bit from Master G era in World Class.
Yeah, he worked in the early 80s. He worked for Crockett. He worked for Georgia. I mean, he did some shots at Florida. He worked for Watts.
Oh, I had no idea until you're telling me this right now. And I usually am really nerdy with stuff like this. So he was
in California with Barry Leonia's promoter. He worked. He worked for Mike LaBelle in Los Angeles. I mean, he worked all over the place. He had Japanese tours.
So George Wells didn't debut in WWF.
No. George Wells was around the 70s.
Get the fuck out of here!
When he
wow.
played football, he wrestled on the side, and he worked in Vancouver and Calgary, and he was a big deal in Canada because he was a football player. In Vancouver, Calgary, he worked for Tunney in Toronto, worked that area, and yeah, he worked all over. Absolutely.
Chris, you remain.
He was Butch Reed's tag partner in Georgia in 81 for a spell. Yeah.
Huh. Was he Master G before World
Yes,
Class?
Yes, in Mid-South for Watts. That Holy was when shit. He first well, used his name. They brought because he was really the first guy that Watts brought in after JYD walked out to be the replacement for JYD. They brought him in with a big push. They gave him, Rapper's Delight as a theme music, Master G's verse on it, as a matter of fact. And he wore this big-ass fucking cast on his hand. This is on WWE Network. He came in with a towel draped over his arm, and said that he had a booking in Madison Square Garden that night, but he gave it up so he can come work for Mid-South. And which is hilarious because that wasn't true. And he confronted Butch Reed in the ring, and then he pulled the towel off and beat the shit out of him with a cast. Which set up ghetto street fights around the horn and everything. And then he started getting the big head and watch jobbed him out.
When I was a young man, like a kid, and I read like ghetto street fights in the magazines, you know, I thought it was like the coolest thing ever. And now I've realized the fucking massive potential racism around it. And I'm like, not so much. But at the time, on paper as a kid, cool name for a match. Mid-Southern, Jerry Lawler still the king of Memphis, although his competition has grown weaker. That's all they write. Continental, another area that mixes up-and-comers with proven veterans. Nothing else. Then lastly, Florida, still providing a proving ground for young talents. Florida boasts the presence of future world champion Lex Luger and current superstar Barry Windham. It is one of the most underrated wrestling federations. Well, not for long.
Florida was in way worse shape than Memphis or Continental was in this era. And Florida was pretty much on the level of world class at this point in time. Absolutely. Oof.
Wow. Well, now we go to Dressing Room Confidential with Stu Sachs. And it's a picture with Magnum Scott Hall with Magnum T.A.
Ooh.
And, yeah, it's got to be a pretty rare photo, as I don't recall Scott Hall and Magnum being on too many cards together. But it looks like it's taken about 86, 87, maybe some photo shoot.
USA, because they worked those shows together.
Yeah, I assume that is it, but they're making fun of the fact that AWA is calling him Magnum Scott Hall. Like, and then they talk about, what's in a name? But he was formerly Big Scott Hall, so I don't know. I guess I like Big Scott Hall a little bit better.
It's the Magnum PI stuff, actually. I wouldn't even say Magnum TA at this point. It's Magnum PI, which is still still a thing on television. So, big show.
The next page, In Focus, which we all love. Tag Team Mania. And it's a picture of the Fabulous Ones, who legit look like they spent at least half a year working out with the Road Warriors. It's the most jacked Fabulous Ones photo I've ever seen in my life. But I'm looking at Kern here, who I would see daily a couple years ago, and I'm just like, that cannot be Steve Kern. It is totally Steve Kern. And fucking Stan Lane looks like Lex Luger in this photo. It's fucking insane. And they hold the Florida Tag Team titles. They're both on the food. And it says, everyone's wondering where tomorrow's tag teams are coming from. Look no further than the Mid-Southern area. All right, so listen to this. They list the tag teams. Fire and Flame, Akio Sato and Tarzan Goto, The Nightmares, Memphis Vice, The Mod Squad, Rough and Ready, Giant Hillbilly and Cousin Junior, The Bruise Brothers, The Hunters, The Beach Boys, The Blade Runners, along with the Fabulous Ones, Fantastics, and Sheepherders. It's like, holy shit, there are a lot of tag teams.
Yeah, but some of those weren't there at that time. They weren't all together at the same time.
Oh, well, they're making it out like
they were. That year, they were all there in that year, but not there at the same time.
Okay. Yeah. Because, like, I remember Fire and Flame was Dirty Rhodes and Don Bass, right?
All right, keep going. Okay. I mean, you know who Rough and Ready was?
See, we're going to get to all of them. I have right, no
we'll
fucking
list.
Idea. Rough and Ready. All right, so we got Fire and Flame, Akio Sato and Tarzan Goto, I think, were Akio Sato
correct.
And Tarzan
yes.
Goto. The Nightmares were Danny Davis correct. And Ken Wayne. Memphis Vice, I have
Jerry
no
Bryant,
fucking idea.
Who died of Lou Gehrig's disease in 1989. Terrible, terrible deal. And Big Lou Winston, who basically quit the business. When Jerry Bryant got sick, and they were a team that was, I tell you, but if Bryant hadn't gotten sick, they would have been one of those teams that would have hung around Memphis and probably, you know, been tag team champions a few times, stuff like that. They were just a Memphis team, man. But I mean, they were really fun. They come out there wearing like the white suits, like Miami Vice and stuff, and would wear like pastel colors and. They were heels, but turned baby faces, and they were really fun. Really fun team.
I think I need to dip into some 85 and 86 Memphis stuff. Because I've seen all like the must-see stuff, but I think there's a lot of stuff
under the... You need to watch the television. You need to get the full glimpse of everything at Memphis.
I'd enjoy the TV. Mod Squad was the Jeffers Brothers, yes. Right? By the way, really good team that gets made fun of and buried all the time.
Very serviceable. They were very serviceable. I mean, they were a good heel tag team to showcase against.
I think Tony Schiavone and Conrad like buried the shit out of them on a recent show, so I got all defensive. But I really like them as a team, especially as the Mod Squad, by the way. And as job guys, I thought they were great. I'm watching a lot of your old 86 Worldwide tapes, and they're fantastic on all those. What else we got here? Oh, and Dusty didn't know. Oh, no, Dusty always liked the Mod Squad. I remember talking to him a little bit about those guys. Not as much as Downtown Denny Brown, but he liked the Mod Squad, too.
Rough and Ready.
Was that Carl Fergie and somebody, or was it
Rough Gilbert? And Ready were these two skinny black guys who, when they first... When they first came in, they were managed by Boss Winners, okay? And their gimmick was, and keyword on Boss, because when they came in basically wearing like your attire that, I mean, they were basically like from the prison, from the chain gang. They basically like chain gang. They're wearing cut off jean shorts and masks. So you could either say they were prisoners or slaves.
So this is like predates Robert Parker.
Oh, yeah. And Boss Winners wore like a Dom DeLuise hat and a vest and, you know, stuff like that. He didn't look like one of those type of guys, but that was what they called him. And they were just a jobber team that used to get the hell beat out of them. They eventually graduated to wearing tights and like a year or two later. But yeah, the early days of Rough and Ready was definitely couldn't happen today.
Okay, now. No. Shouldn't have happened in 86 years.
No.
Giant Hillbilly and Cousin Junior. That's correct. Elmer, yeah. Right?
Which they billed him at first, Uncle Elmer, until the WWF came a calling, and they had to go to Uncle Giant Hillbilly. But Cousin Junior, I mean, they let Cousin Junior go, which was interesting. Not Uncle Elmer.
Yeah, it's kind of weird. I don't understand that. And then the Bruise Brothers. That was not Ron.
This would be the original Bruise Brothers. In fact, this would be Porkchop Cash and Mad Dog Boyd.
Who the fuck is Mad Dog Boyd? Boyd
was the guy who, Dream Machine replaced Mad Dog Boyd Quintessential. Dream Machine. He's in prison at this time, I think. The Quintessential Bruise Brothers. Mad Dog was this fat black guy who he was a local wrestler in Mississippi in that area, and He worked around Memphis and stuff like that. He had his famous match was he had a little feud with Bobby Eaton in '83, where they did loser eats dog food matches, and Eaton would have to eat the dog food, or so it was so supposed to be dog food. But yeah, that was Mad Dog Boyd. They were the Bruise Brothers in Mid-South in late '85, early '86, feuding with the Sheepherders.
All right. Basically, the Mad Dog Boyd is the Bruise Brother who I never knew who it was. Yeah. So there it is, that guy. Who is the Hunters?
Bob Brown, the other Bob Brown. This would be the Georgia jobber Bob Brown, who was a short, stocky, bald dude. And legendary jobber Dale Veazey. Or as you may remember him, the future Lieutenant James Earl Wright from the State Patrol.
All right, James Earl Wright. I love that six-man he had with State Patrol guy and who was it? Fuck, Mr. Hughes against Tommy Rich, Ricky Morton, and JYD.
Dale Veazey also match. Famous muscle bear on YouTube.
I've heard this. It's been something that's been told to me a time or two. Muscle bear. It's probably been a decade since I heard that term, and it's still fucking equally hilarious. The Beach Boys.
Who are the Beach Boys? Van Horn and the illustrious Johnny Stewart.
Holy fuck. Van Horn was in Memphis with the illustrious Johnny Stewart.
And baby faces.
I need to watch Memphis TV so bad. I never even knew Van Horn wrestled in 1986. Who is the Blade Runners? Oh, I know who that is. That's Sting.
They were there early '86 before going to watch. Yeah.
All right. God, that was fun. All right, so there's all those. I got my learning
and
for the day.
Yeah, you mentioned the sheep herders in there, right?
Yes, it's Jonathan Boyd.
No, it's not.
Other guy, right?
All right, here's what it was in early 86. Jonathan Boyd became like the third man of the sheep herders team and became like a manager. It was the sheep herders at this point in time that were wrestling was Rip Morgan and Taras Bulba.
Wow. See, I didn't even know Taras Bulba was a sheep herder. Huh. I like Taras Bulba. I was a big fan. So now on assignment with Easy Liz Hunter, we got Jimmy Valiant, and it's like a picture of Jimmy Valiant in the 50s and Jimmy Valiant currently bald, like bald Jimmy Valiant after Paul Jones match, and like a ragged beard and tons of like, oh yeah. And it's just like, I just remember this shocking me as a child that like the guy on the left could be the same guy on the right. Like, what the fuck? Like, they look so different. It's crazy.
Yeah, the visual, if you've never seen Jimmy Valiant get his head shaved, watch it. And watch his facials. Just watch everything about him and that. Oh, it's so awesome.
It was like he was dying.
Yes.
Oh yeah. Jimmy, I love Jimmy. I've probably watched goddamn 80 Jimmy Valiant matches in the last month just because I watch a lot of the TV. And it's basically 80 seconds worth of Jimmy Valiant.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Like standing elbow and then falling elbow, boom, 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 that's it. So it's quick, it's painless. He comes out to Boy from New York City and he fucking hits the big claps and then elbows you, boom. It's one of those things where I never knew Jimmy Valiant kind of sucked as a wrestler until like 30 years later. Because like when I was a kid, I was just conditioned, hey, cool, man. He's got all that calcium in his elbow. He elbows you, you fall down, he elbows you again. That's it. And it's like, he's a great worker in the fact that like he could do such a minimal amount of stuff and still be over. So good for
him. He sucked as a work rate wrestler. I mean, as a professional wrestler, Jimmy Valiant was a great professional wrestler. Remember, it's different.
Because in the NWA, it's like none of the top guys would wrestle him much. Because it's like they couldn't have a match with him. Like they do angles with him, but they didn't wrestle him. So then he would just get Dusty. He was like Dusty's guy who we just put with the undercard guys, all the Paul Jones.
I mean,
army.
He did have his, like, he did have his time. I mean, he had a house show feud with Tully in early 86. Between when
Tully piled him on the concrete, and it's just like it was such nothing. It was a nothing feud in hindsight. And even Jimmy Garvin wrestled him, and like it was like a 1 minute match, and I was like, oh shit, okay. So it's interesting to me that in Memphis he was a primetime money ball player all the time and mixed in and having matches. In NWA, for whatever reason, he just had his niche, usually in six man with like Rocky King or the Bull or Superstar Graham or Bugsy McGraw later, and he would just have his little match, and Dusty kept him around, and he did his thing, and he got tons of heat because he's such a sympathetic figure.
He had been a top draw in the territory just a couple years earlier. I mean, his feud with Ivan Koloff.
Yeah.
I mean, they broke records in buildings,
like in the Carolinas, right?
Yeah, they broke records.
Huge feud. Yeah, it's crazy because obviously people age and everything. Like I talked on the other podcast about like Sergeant Slaughter and JYD. Like, I was a fan of JYD in 1988. Like, I loved his Weeble Wobble cell where you'd fall down and do a pirouette. Like, I fucking loved it. Like, I love JYD. But people are like, oh, God, JYD is one of the worst wrestlers of all time. I don't think so. Like, Jimmy Valiant, I appreciate it for what he was. But it's just interesting to me how in the NWA, as much as I wanted it, he never had, like, a big Flair series on pay-per-view. And it was just me as a kid wanting it. But, like, Dusty knew where to put him on a show. Have the fans be happy when T.J. Khan took the fall and then move on. So it's interesting. And again, that feud with Shaska Pezwatli and Paul Jones is fucking great. And I thought Shaska Pezwatli was awesome. I thought his turn was a little unusual. it's hilarious to watch. Like, I cry laughing watching that heel turn. Just because, like, the headbutt comes from out of nowhere. And, like, Jimmy Valiant just falls down and starts twitching. Oh, it's so fucking funny. But, you know, I liked it a lot. But, you know, the boogeyman, you know, what can you say? Lasertron got involved eventually. It's just classic, man. Like, Jimmy Valiant. Imagine like Jimmy Valiant was the booker. I wonder what Jimmy Valiant.
Oh my God!
You know what I mean?
It would have been wild.
Because my two favorite tag teams in 1987 were Jim Garvin and P.S. Hayes. Like, they came out to Bad Street, but, like, Jimmy Garvin was still Jimmy Garvin, not Jimmy Jam. And I just thought that was a really cool tag team. And then I remember Bugsy McGraw and Jimmy Valiant, who I then later found out won the worst tag team of the year or whatever. But, like, oh, my God, Bugsy McGraw had the wacky goggles and the wacky jacket. And I fucking love those, too. So it's one of those funny things where, you know, it's just watching wrestling for what it is and enjoying it, as opposed to, like, I probably if I was 20 years older, I might have hated it. You know what I mean? It's just through whatever eyes you're watching with, you know. But I love
people need to get out of watching Bugsy wrestling McGraw that way. I think personally,
yeah, I mean, agree.
The days of watching wrestling and having
like
watching it in that mindset of, all right, how let me review this match. That mindset of to try to do a review. You know, I'm just watching to have fun. If I, you know, if I'm entertained, I'm good. Yeah. You know, just entertain me.
It's say that because I was looking at an AEW review just the other day of someone who I enjoy reading, and I was just like, dude, this guy, and it's just like he's watching it to get upset and just get his take out, and like to no avail actually. So I was just like, Jesus, dude, like just. Like the reason I think I stopped watching WWE was because I was getting like that, you know what I mean? It's like, well, what the fuck is the point? If you're just going to get upset when you watch something, just don't watch it, right? But this thing where like people just watching, just, oh, here's my take. Here's what I'm going to do. Here's my little quip. It's like, shut the fuck up. Anyway, sorry for my little editorializing there. Back to the happy show. So Road Warrior Hawk, okay? He's on the next page. He's wearing one of his S&M vests with all like pointy spikes coming out of it. Like if he gave you the schnooka fly off the top, you're going to fucking die. But this is Eddie Elner's off the top rope column, which is the best column. By the way, do you know who was giving the flying body press to who? You know what I mean, right? There's like this photo at the top of off the top rope where it's a guy giving a body press off the top onto someone else. Anyone? Our show is very fan friendly.
Is the guy giving a the guy giving the body press? Is he wearing a mask?
Oh fuck! I can't tell because I'm old and blind. It might be Mil Máscaras. That's what
I'm trying to think. I'm thinking it's Mil Máscaras. I'll have to go back and look, and I'll tell you later. But
yeah, it's from the. It looks like it's from the Olympic Auditorium.
I'm thinking it's Mil Máscaras and somebody. Yeah.
Yeah, and he's wrestling a guy who looks like he's wearing like. You'll know what I mean. Pedro Morales tights, where it's like tights, but then there's like a little line on the side. So, that's so funny. Oh, I knew you would know. But yeah, I never even thought about who it might have been. But so this is Eddie Elner's column. And here's a poem. The Rock and Roll Express are NWA champs, but watching them gives me cramps. Take another look at the Rock and Roll Express. You would think that they wear a dress. There it is, guys. This is why you listen to our show. Wow. Holy shit. All right. Yeah, there it was. Yeah, not a big fan of the R&R, apparently. So then they talk about how the Road Warriors lost their killer instinct, which I think they fucking said every single magazine for 3 years. But now I'm going to go to the rest of the article. What else do we got here? Do you think scientists from another era will determine the cause of the Big Bang? What the fuck is any of this? It says, just as I ready my readers for the guillotine, along comes an intelligent, entertaining letter. Small wonder the author is from Holland. What Dimitri overlooks in his analysis is the response men like Bruiser Brody, Stan Hansen, Paul Orndorff, Lex Luger would have could postpone the big kabang long enough to get their licks in. Wrestling might rid itself of wimps forever. The thought makes me faint with fantasy. Oh, wow. Look at that. Elner enjoys his big bruisers. Now, dear Eddie, how long do you think Roddy Piper's change of heart will last? And he says, dear Thurston, excuse me, Thurston, I think I just blinked. Is Roddy Piper still a hero? Oh, that's a good one. Yeah. So that's Eddie Elner's column for that month. We're going to go now to the top 10 rankings, okay. Chris.
All right.
All right. And we're not even going to do any of them. We're going to do who would beat who, because I love this. World class number one is from Pampa, Texas. His name is Black Bart. The number one in Florida is Lex Luger from Chicago, Illinois. Who would you pick?
At this point in time, Luger's going to win because of who he is. But, you know, Bart was better at that point in time, for sure, as a wrestler.
There you go. Look at that. Way to go, Bart. All right. Here we go for another one. Number four in world class, Lance Von Erich. Number four in Florida, Kendall Windham.
Oh, my God. That's a dream match. I'd go with Kendall Windham.
Good one. All right. Kendall Windham, the human Q-tip, defeats Lance Von Erich. Mid-Southern. All right. We're going to go with – let me pick a good one here. Number eight from Philadelphia, Mississippi, which always confused me as a child, Hillbilly Elmer. And so look at that. Between page like 6 and page 23, he went from Giant Hillbilly to Hillbilly Elmer. Hillbilly Elmer, or number 8 from Houston, Texas, the good Dr. Tom Pritchard. I hate to say this, as much as I love Doc, you know, he's looking up the lights against Hillbilly Elmer.
Well...
and he,
yeah.
Sorry, Doc. You know you're the winner of my heart, but no. All right, we've got the women's ranked. This is a special one. They don't do this normally. How dare they? The women's rankings in PWI in October 1986. The number one. Who you want to guess? Who it is? Fabulous Moolah is number four.
So 86. Sherry.
Yeah. Boom. AWA Women's Champion is number one. Could you guess who number two was? I love that you sigh before you guess.
Dang. Judy Martin.
Who's my favorite?
Who's your favorite? I'm trying to think. Who is your favorite?
Misty Blue Sims.
Oh, my God. I thought you would have been number one. You said number two.
Misty Blue Sims was the U.S. and IWF Women's Champion, whatever that means. Number three was Wendy Richter. Number four, the aforementioned Fabulous Moolah. Number five, Linda Dallas, another one of my favorites. Number six, Velvet McIntyre. Number seven, my very good longtime personal friend, Leilani Kai, who was the All-Pacific Women's Champion. Love you, Leilani. Number eight was Candy Devine. Not a friend of mine. Number nine, Comrade Orca, who I don't know who the fuck that is. And then number 10, Debbie Combs.
Wow.
What you know Comrade about Comrade Orca, worked, there, Chris?
She worked a lot of the promotions. She was just – she was a regular opponent for Misty Blue at times. And she was affiliated – remember Mad Dog Debbie?
I have no idea who that is. Okay, Mad
Dog Debbie. I mean, yeah, she was just a heel women's wrestler that would travel around and, you know, do stuff.
Wow. But yeah, Chris, I always had an affinity for Misty Blue.
You were the only one.
I never saw her on TV. She'd just be in the magazines and they'd play her up much like this as the number two woman in the world. And she was like the NWA affiliated girl. Like AWA had women's wrestling and WWF had women's wrestling. There was no fucking women's wrestling to be found in the NWA.
Yeah, one of the famous Pro Wrestling This Week segments of that era was Gordon Solie interviewing Misty Blue in a bikini at Poolside. And, he was very happy to do that interview.
Yeah, even like pre-hormones kicking in, Rob Naylor liked Misty Blue. Now I have a whole new take on her. Bless her heart.
You know, maybe you can get lucky and find the porn she did with Ron Jeremy.
You gotta be kidding me.
Oh, yeah. Then multiple pornos, actually.
So, wait. Jesus Christ. So, Misty Blue and Linda Dallas, her longtime wrestling rival, doubled up on the hedgehog Ron Jeremy.
But, they did some porn.
Mine goes. Okay, so they both had different. Oh, Jesus Christ. Well, there that was.
One of the movies was Hellcat, if I'm not mistaken. And I'm trying to remember the other one.
With Wild. With Live Bait is my favorite name. Okay, so now we change the page. Run away from the topic fast. So now what we got is wrestling analysis, where every month behind the ratings, they give different ratings. You're going to love this. The rock and wrestling connection is very strong, as evidenced by the amount of mail we got on top 10 ring entrance music. Number one, ELO's Rock and Roll is King. Number two, Rick Derringer's Real American. Number three, Black Sabbath's Iron Man. I'd have that as my number one. But number four, Pop and Circumstance, Macho Man. Number five, Bad Street USA. Number six, Bob Seger's Old Time Rock and Roll, Dusty Rhodes. Seven, ZZ Top, Sharp Dressed Man, Jimmy Garvin. Number eight, Born in the USA, US Express, at least for now. Number nine, one of my absolute favorites, Grab Them Cakes, Junkyard Dog. Like, he's singing it, actually. And then number 10, Sade, Smooth Operator.
Now, we got to specify here. On Dusty's version of Old Time Rock and Roll, it is the live version. From the 9 to 9 album is the version that Dusty used, that Rock and Rolls would use in Smoky Mountain. But yeah, that is the specific version. There is a difference. It is the best version of that song. Believe me.
Here we go. When Lori Bennett of Westminster, Texas goes to the wrestling match, she probably asks for seats as close to the ring as possible so she can keep an eye on the top 10 bottoms in wrestling.
Top 10 bottoms in wrestling. Oh boy, I could really make some jokes here. That's 15 minutes of material right there.
I'm going 10 down because number one's a shocker. Number 10, Steve Simpson. Number 9, Lance Von Erich. Number 8, Ric Flair. Number 7, Chris Adams. Number 6, Kevin Von Erich. Number 5, Blade Runner Sting, which is a classic random one. Number 4, Road Warrior Hawk. Number 3, Road Warrior Animal. So this lady picked Animal's Rear End over Hawks. Number 2, The Dingo Warrior. And number 1, do you want to guess who that might be, Chris? Or are you going to leave this one go?
The number 1 ass. It's not going to be Carrie, is it?
Michael P.S. Hayes.
He had a dump. There it is. Now, here's the thing. When you talk about the top 10 bottoms in wrestling, again, I could go 15 minutes on this, but I'm not. Steve Lombardi is probably going to be very high on the list. if you catch my drift, but
if we had our good friend Ghost of Quiñones on the show
would go my Lord. At least two. But I'm trying to
bottoms, power bottoms or regulation bottoms. Okay, so
who would you say had?
Oh, he'd have at least 20 minutes material on Joe LaDuke alone.
I'm talking about the ass part now. Who of male wrestlers? Who would you say had the best ass of a male wrestler?
God, 86.
I wouldn't say really. Let me look. I was gonna say all time.
Oh Jesus Christ! That's what do I think? I mean, Yokozuna.
Well, he had the biggest ass.
the most prominent ass. I would probably go with Yoko. Rick Rude was nice and taut. What else do we got? I don't know. I'd go with Yoko or Rick Rude. How's that for a massive discrepancy?
Yeah, that's good. Ron Simmons.
You didn't tell me if we can include women. I was just trying not to be sexist.
I'm going all guys. So Ron Simmons. Ron Simmons. You know,
there you go.
Have one like that. You had a plump ass. Yeah, I mean, that's quite the ratings list there. I wasn't expecting that.
Yeah, Ron Simmons, ooh, 10 most abused referees. Let's run from that topic, because now we've got the funny thing is the winner of this actually had to retire from abuse. Number 10, Scott LeDoux. Number 9, Jerry Calhoun. 8, Rick Hazard. 7, Bill Alfonso. 6, David Manning. 5, Dick Worley. 4, Carl Fergie. 3, Dick Kroll. 2, Tommy Gilbert. And number 1, Tommy Young.
Yeah, Tommy Young's going to win, obviously. But, yeah, Scott LeDoux shouldn't count. He's an actual wrestler. I mean, he's a guy who's a boxer and stuff like that. Yeah, he got abused, but come on. I mean, that.
All right, two more of these, because these are this has been, despite the fact we're only on page 24, there's a lot in this magazine. The 10 worst conditioned wrestlers. Yeah. Number 10, Kimala. which I didn't think he was in that bad shape. Number 9, Hillbilly Elmer. You can never really tell how out of shape he was either. 8, Cousin Luke. Completely not worthy of the list. 7, Kareem Muhammad. I always thought Kareem was just a big guy. 6, Buddy Rose, 217 pounds. 5, Dusty Rhodes, how dare they. 4, Andre the Giant, pretty prominent stomach at the time. 3, King Kong Bundy, the widest man ever the fucking walked the earth. 2, there you go. 2, Abdullah the Butcher, more breasts than Frank Perdue. And then number one, we have got Adrian Adonis, who was pushing maximum density at the time. So there you go. Okay, now last thing we'll do. Top 10 best wrestling magazines. This is how they got us, Chris, because we'd read this and then we'd agree with them, like these magazines. Shockingly enough, they're all from the Stanley Weston Company.
I was about to say, there's no way that they acknowledge opposing magazines. I'm curious to see how they filled this out.
Number 10, Victory Sports Wrestling. Number 9, Wrestler Annual. It's like they basically saw what sold the least. Number 8, PWI Annual. Number 7, PWI Supercolor Special, which I think I'm surprised it's that low because I think they probably spent a lot of money on that one. Number 6, Wrestling Superstars. Bullshit. Number 5, Sports Review Wrestling. I'd have that way lower. Number 4, Wrestling 86. I always did like that one. Number 3, now 1, 2, and 3. Where did Illustrated Wrestler and Inside Wrestling wind up, Chris?
Personal Share is number 1.
Yeah, you're right.
The Wrestler's number 2, Inside Wrestling 3.
Fuck, you're the man. You got it. Yeah, that's what they ended up being. All right. Hogan versus Orndorff, wrestling's hottest feud. Basically just a bunch of pictures of Hogan wrestling Paul Orndorff. They've got footage from the big show, big event. You can't really tell the crowd with any of these shots, but they got the really famous photo, which I'll put up for everybody on the internet, of Hogan pile driving Orndorff and Bobby Heenan hitting him with like a boxing stool, like the little stool. That's a cool photo. Where do you put Orndorff on the Hogan opponents list, Chris?
Number 2 behind Savage.
Wow, see, I was going to tell you, he's pretty
number
high
two
on
behind
my
Savage because the money they drew, man. They killed it. I mean, Hogan Andre, I would put 3, but just because of the matches. Hogan Orndorff had better matches, and that's the only reason why. But Hogan Savage number 1, Hogan Orndorff 2, Hogan Andre 3. That's my 3.
Yeah, I think Hogan Orndorff really doesn't get its proper due, maybe amongst people like us. But a lot of times on the retrospectives you see on WWF, you don't really hear that talked about as much as Hogan feud. But that was the one. That was one of the first turns I ever saw, so it was super effective. And it's weird. It feels like that was like everybody's first turn that they saw.
It was the last time, really, that Hulk Hogan came off as a human being, not Hulk Hogan, the cartoon character. Do you remember like the video montage that they did where Vince was in the gym with Hogan and they were going to the video montage of all the events that led up to the turn and Hogan's promo? That's one of the best promos he ever gave in his life. And that feud was like the last real genuine time the Hulk Hogan came off as a human.
Yeah. And it also came across as like a tangible wrestling program. Cause like even the call when Hogan's on the phone trying to get a hold of him, he's in like this wooden paneled room in Hamburg, you know, and it's so cool. I love it. But yeah, that was a hell of a feud. And then Orndorff would come out to Hogan's song, and it was just the best. I remember that match when he turned on Hogan, and then Flair turned on Dusty a little bit prior to that.
Way prior than that. I'm like, you know, God.
My time
Flair
runs
turned
together,
on Dusty
I suppose.
In September 85, and then Orndorff turned on Hogan in July 86.
There you go. The press conference is with Magnum TA. They're talking about
so
the
obviously this was before the wreck.
This is right before the wreck. I think it was in the middle of the series.
What's the date on the What's the date on the ratings? Yep. That way I can tell.
1 second.
Yeah, that way I'll know when that, because that's usually the date they pretty much.
Oh, October 6, 1986.
A week before the crash.
Wow. Yeah, because he says something here where the series took a toll on me, and yeah, that's pretty much it. But yeah, he looks like a total heel. Like every picture they have of Magnum, he looks angry. Which I think Cornette mentioned something about
Magnum
this once.
Yeah,
where
Magnum had that look. Yeah.
But like the mustache always made it look like he's frowning, which is so true. Which I love what Cornette said that, because that's accurate. Like he did always look like he was frowning. But he was just a badass, intense
brooding
guy, which is cool.
What they call brooding. You remember when Twilight was out and they were talking about how, you know, Robert Pattinson, he's brooding and guys like that. Yeah, Magnum was one of those guys. He was brooding.
Magnum TA was brooding. Now, PWI's Who is the Best in the UWF Tournament? And basically, it's a rare, you know, partnership between the magazine and the federation. Who's the best? And now, Chris, I'm about to cry, because apparently when I ripped out the picture of Macho Man Randy Savage and Elizabeth, it ripped out two other pages too. So I have basically PWI's 50,000 Who's the Best, and then two pages missing, and then it goes on to like Dusty and Baby Doll. So let me read what the Dusty and Baby Doll story is. 1 second. We'll figure this out, guys. World Championship Wrestling Confidential. Baby Doll tells all. So then she has a little thing too. But we'll discuss who's in the tournament.
Just talk for a few seconds. I'm about to go grab the magazine. I know where it's at. I know where I can get it really quick.
Oh, sweet. Right. Thanks, buddy. All right. I'm going to keep talking while he gets the magazine. All right. So why he goes, what I'm going to do is I'm going to read you guys who is on the cover of the magazine. It was Buddy Roberts, Michael Hayes, Terry Gordy. So we got three Freebirds in the tournament. We got One Man Gang, who's unaffiliated with anyone. He's at Skandar Akbar. And then you got Terry Taylor, Ted DiBiase, and Dr. Death Steve Williams. So you've got 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 competitors.
What page are we missing?
We are missing so on 32, I don't have 33.
All right, so 33 basically is it's pictures of the UWF guys, all the major names, and it goes over how Bill Watts, Kim Mantell, they met up with Peter King and Bill After for a solid week to organize a tournament, and how they set it up in Houston. It would begin in Houston on Halloween night and then end in Houston December 12th. 7 weeks, different sites throughout the country. Single elimination, $50,000 tournament. That's 33. What about 34?
Real quick, before you get into that, it's interesting to me that that would have been the second tournament in Houston within like a span
of a month. The UWF Heavyweight title tournament was in June. And then so.
Oh, I thought September. I thought it was in September.
It was in June, and this is in September. So yeah, I mean, starting October. So yeah, it's only 4 months.
Well, anyone that might be listening to our show from WWE, I want the tournament the Gordy won in June, like Chris said, not the one in September. Well,
they have that stuff.
Yeah, I never thought it would actually happen. Like I remember a couple of years ago, I'm like 3 years ago, I'm like, they need to get it up. All right, and I'm just like, oh, they got to get that tournament on. And I remember Jim Ross liked it. I'm like, fuck yeah, Jim Ross, you know too, it's gonna be cool. And then I just figured, it'll never happen because they'll never put anything up there without commentary.
So are you missing them on 34?
I don't have 34, 35, 36, 37.
Oh my goodness. 38. You don't have all the, where do you begin?
I'm looking. Okay, so I'm sorry for picking the shit.
Well, here, listen. My magazine ends at 34 and begins again at 39.
Okay, cool, because the centerfold was 4 pages. There you go. So, okay, so I don't have 33. So if you flip it to 34, what's on 34?
It's got to run down the names of the guys in there, and it's got the story behind the cover.
Okay, which we know about.
And it's got the other cover photo with Chris Adams, Gordy, Sting, and Gang, just those four, with Sting holding the trophy and Adams pointing to it.
Oh my god, I remember that. Actually, take a picture of that because we'll put that in there. I like the other cover photo. So yeah, these photos must have been out of my magazine for a long, long time because I do remember the other cover. But yeah, I like the way like they tell the story of how kayfabe wasn't broken and everyone just fought over the trophy. Yeah, they got all kinds of
quotes from guys, you know, about it.
So then you got the color pinup, and then you have the baby doll story, correct?
My pinup's gone too. That's odd, isn't it?
Yeah, we just love Macho.
Well, I mean, this magazine, I just got this magazine in the mail. I think I have another version of, but I just got this magazine in the mail, thanks to our dear friend Roy Lucier. And I think I have another version of this magazine somewhere, though, but this is the one I got to first. So.
Well, thank you, Roy, as always, for listening. Yes, you are the man. He'd be someone we could actually have on here. Oh,
yes, absolutely.
Would duel with both of us about all this stuff for sure. So now Baby Doll, her intimate confidential. There's a photo of her and Dusty Rhodes on page 41 where she looks like Ozzy Osbourne. the fact that Chris laughs so much, guys, I'm right. He does. Like, she totally looks like Ozzy Osbourne.
They really teased her hair up in this era. They really were trying to make her look like she was, you know, a hair metal chick at one point in time. And then she got they cut it down, though, and eventually she just had, you know, regular hair. Well, regular long hair, blah, 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 blah. And, yeah. But, yeah, there was a point in time early 86, late 85, where she would have that hair, yeah.
I like this quote. I would like Dusty Rhodes to wrestle the Warlord during the 1987 Great American Bash. That is, if that toad is brave enough to step through the ropes with my man. Fantastic.
Baby Doll Ric Flair. I don't know if me and you've talked about this before on the show. What were your thoughts on that short-lived relationship?
I guess I liked it. It's one of those things where, as a child, we're almost learning not to trust women through wrestling, which I think is so shitty. No, it really is shitty. It's not good. Like, I have no trust issues with women, but I will say I, at the time, thought, man, fuck her. Like, what a bitch. Like, Dusty helped her after Tully smacked her, and then she just turned on Dusty. You know what I mean? So, like, thank God Precious was so cool. So, you know, but Baby Doll literally gave me, like, a bad take on women, because she was literally like the only woman presented pretty regularly in wrestling at the time. Like, Elizabeth was too, but she was like Sugar Spice and everything nice, so she was just like a macho man. So you're like, well, why? Yeah, Jezebel. She's like, well, why is Elizabeth with this dickhead of a guy? Like, what the fuck's wrong with her? And then, like, Precious was always cool. Precious, out of all of them, seemed like, if we're looking at it through 2019 eyes, Precious is like the only one that was kind of like portrayed in a positive manner. Whereas, like, she basically was this cool chick that was with Jimmy Garvin. Okay, she kind of was submissive and took care of Jimmy Garvin, but at the same time,
well,
she was like
a
tough chick.
She would spray you with a spray, yeah, you know?
Yeah, she was cool. And, like, Precious is, she's all the way Lhasa, they'd say on the other channel. But yeah, I like Precious a lot. Channel, listen to me. Yeah, Precious was cool. Baby Doll, I never had, like, I really thought it was cool when she knocked out Bobby Eaton. And the funny thing is, Chris, until you gave me the tape of it or the DVD of it, I hadn't seen that.
Really?
Like, when I was a little kid, me and my dad or my sister and mom had to go out anywhere, I would put a tape recorder next to the TV because we didn't have a VCR until like 88. So I would tape record wrestling. So I would come back to the house and I would play the cassette tape of what happened. And like, I played that cassette tape of Jim Crockett going nuts when Baby Doll KO'd Bobby Eaton. And at first I thought she knocked out Big Bubba because he kept yelling, Bubba, you know, she knocked out Bobby Eaton. And it was just, like, so crazy because you remember how the heat was, right? So the heat was just so crazy. You really wish that would come back. Like, I'm on my way to Philly in 2 days for the AEW show, and I'm hearing really good things about live shows with them. So, God, I'm hoping it's, like not like it used to be, it can't be, but like, I hope it's close, you know what I mean? So it's – but that crowd heat in that era in those little gyms in the NWA – nothing like it, right?
Oh, man. 86 in general. I mean, you look at the Crockett TV crowds. You look at the UWF crowds. You look at, you know, the crowds at Continental. I mean, Memphis television crowds. I mean, it's everywhere. I mean, WWF had great crowds in 86 as well. I mean, it's everywhere. The Las Vegas AWA crowds. I mean, there were some hot AWA tapings in Las Vegas, man. I mean, just great stuff.
Yeah, that Rockers and Buddy Rose and Duck Summers.
Great year. Right. One of our favorite years in wrestling history.
Where was the first time you heard the Oof?
That would be Crockett Television.
Because I heard Oof, to the uninitiated, what we're talking about is when a good guy does his comeback and hits a bad guy, and the fans just go, Oof, Oof, every time they hit. And it sounds kind of stupid, me just doing it, but like, I swear to God, it would pump me up so much when they would have it back in like the mid-80s. And I don't remember when the Oof went away. And anyone who's listening to this, you're going to think it's the stupidest conversation ever. You're going to get
what it happens. It's a Southern thing, and it depends on where you're at. Like the WrestleAmerica shows here will happen. Yep.
Okay. I'm talking like on television.
Oh, God. That would have been probably in the 90s. WCW.
Okay. Yeah, because So you're telling me Wrestle America has Oofs and I've never heard them at any like, I believe you. If you're telling me they do Oofs, I wish I could go to a Wrestle America show again because I went to like 3 or 4.
Dude, we got a Tar and Feathering match coming up in November.
Oh, man, I love living vicariously through Zellner because like he goes to all these shows with Fry Daddy and all these Tyson other fucking Dane. People. I
love it. Tyson Dane.
I'll tell you what, I went to a show in Atlanta. Priscilla was on it, obviously, and Priscilla wrestled on the show. And then after her match, we just kind of sat up in the bleachers and watched some of the show. And I remember it had to have been 500 degrees in that fucking building. It was fucking dreadful. Like, it made that building that – made that Evolve show or what was that, a Progress show? It made that Progress show in New York seem like a
that
show
was
in
a,
Iceland.
That was a show was in Griffin, right? At the old school?
There you go. See, you know more than
gym.
I would.
Yeah.
Yeah, the old – like, what's his name? Is it Jax Dane? I forget what the guy's name is, but like
– Jax Dane worked that show probably.
Yeah. No, it's Tyson Dane. It's like a super Southern. Yeah. So it was a Tyson Dane show. And I just remember thinking, oh man, this is the hottest show I've ever been to in my entire life. Like, I didn't know it could get that way. And like Georgia, I never felt Georgia was hotter than Florida was, but that building was the hottest building I've ever been in my life. I think I chugged like 25 waters that day, and Tommy Rich was there too. So bless Tommy. He stayed at least the fourth match, but I was like, holy fuck, man. But yeah, God bless Georgia Amen. Wrestling guys. They keeping the Oof alive, man. Oof. Okay. So I'm flipping the page now. We're going to go to the scouting report. All right. This is a really good scouting report, Chris, if you have the magazine.
Yeah. I had the magazine spoiled, open man. Actually. Yes.
So we got Brad Armstrong, the Iron Sheik, Ole Anderson right next to his nemesis Lanny Poffo, and then you've got Sting and Steve Simpson at the top. And Chris, I swear to God, all I can do is look down at Lanny Poffo and Ole next to each other and hear Lanny Poffo going, "So Ole, how's my used pussy?"
Ole Anderson gave Randy Savage the Randy Savage name.
Yeah, and I remember I think Meltzer told Cornette that on one of those Wrestling Gold DVDs. I don't even think Cornette knew that, but something really funny about that Lanny Poffo used pussy line with Ole Anderson was like, I'm watching this interview back in the day, right? And it's Lanny Poffo, so he's very articulate and well-spoken and super clean for a shoot interview, you know? So it's like, oh, this is nice. Good job. Ooh, that's nice. Good times. What a nice story. And like, everything's all positive and happy. And then when he dropped that line, I was like, holy fuck. This thing got pretty crazy pretty fast. And then like the shoot interviews he's done since, let's face it, they're out of control. But at the time, it was like he's telling poems that he tells kids and he's like, oh, yeah, well, hey, Ole Anderson, how's the used pussy? And I'm like, oh, my God. It's like the most vulgar thing I think I've ever heard on a shoot interview out of Lanny Poffo. But he didn't talk about his party trick in the first shoot interview, thank God. So, okay, we're going to get to the athletes. Brad Armstrong. This is the best look Brad Armstrong ever had in this magazine. Looks cool as shit. Looks jacked. 6 feet tall. 226. Marietta, course, Georgia. Yeah. And number 9 in world championship. Leg strength, training, improvement. Has injuries, opposition, and slow starter, it says here. Yeah, Brad was the man, dude. He's awesome. Right around this time when he came to the NWA area. You know, how good was Brad? I thought – I remember they did an – they had – I think they did an angle on TV with him and Flair. Brad, but they were giving him a push there for a second.
Tommy Rich and, you know, wrestling too. That was my childhood heroes, man. I mean, that, as far as like wrestlers, I mean, they were the three guys. And then, of course, you know, Dusty, and I became a fan of the Crockett guys as well. But, I mean, yeah, Brad, Tommy Rich, wrestling too. They just had that – these are our guys because they were Georgia legends in a way. Bob as well. I mean, these are our guys. It's like our home team, you know. And I always love Brad Armstrong forever and ever and ever.
Yeah, he's the man. And then we got the Iron Sheik from Tehran, Iran. He's got a magnificent amateur background. Suplexes, very true. Sheik's very underrated when it comes to throwing suplexes in the mid 80s. Upper body and upper arm strength. Stale style as a weakness, psyched out weakness, unnecessary over dependence on rule breaking methods. Jesus Christ, that's a long verbose way of saying something, I think. He was a superb wrestler, but should not need to break rules.
What they're saying
rules.
About stale, dude, what you didn't mention, is they're basically saying he's teamed with Volkov too damn long. That's what it is.
Yeah. So, what was. I like Nikolai Volkov. I used him today in a tweet talking about a match with Boris Zhukov. Just because, like, I think that's a match I've seen where, like, the absolute – I don't think there was a bump in the match from anyone. And, like, if anything, like, I just think it was, like, a double disqualification or something. But I don't know, man. I think Volkov – like, Volkov as an opponent for Hulk was cool. Volkov had a couple good ones where he beat the shit out of Corporal Kirshner that I enjoyed. I like that little spinning kick, but bigger Sheik guy than Volkov guy.
They each had their moments. Volkov was at his best to me when he worked for Watts and worked in Georgia there right before WWF. He was really strong.
Have you ever seen him take a flat back bump?
Not that I can remember.
Yeah, because I sometimes like to make stupid lists in my head that only I would care about. And like one of them's like, who in wrestling has – because someone the other day is like, John Nord's one of the few wrestlers to never hold any title. So you know that got me thinking for at least fucking an hour. So because they're like, oh, who else could ever – never won any title
John
whatsoever
Nord,
anywhere.
John Nord, wouldn't he have to be a tag champion?
Nope.
Him and Norton never won the tag titles.
Nope.
Holy shit.
No, the UConn – Jacks were not, no. So, like, he's a good one, you know? And that came from someone who never had, like, small territory. Because even small territories count. So, like, nowadays with indies, you barely can't, like, everyone gets a belt. But old school, it's interesting to think who never had one. Like, Jake had Georgia belts,
Jake,
you know?
He was a North American champion for Watts, a Mid-South Television champ for Watts. He was one-third of the world-class six-man tag champions with Gino and Chris, and numerous
but
titles.
The non-flatbackers, I got to think, Hacksaw Duggan, he always took the rolling bumps. Not saying anything's wrong with it, just noticeable. Nikolai Volkov.
Yeah.
Big John Studd took body slam, so he counts. He's good. Johnny Gonzalez. Zeus took a body slam. That's a flatback of sorts. It's an interesting question. It's just one of those things where you think of guys who took rolling bumps and why. And if say they had to, great. You know, it's preserving their body. It's awesome. But it's interesting coming from seeing people train and take like goddamn 160 flatbacks a day. It's just always interesting to me to like watch guys in that era wrestle and not take any. It's like, and let's face it, the ring was goddamn Chinese arithmetic level. So, next guy up, Sting from Parts Unknown. 1 year as a pro. His power is a strength. His ability to absorb punishment is a strength. And he has an even temper, they say. lack of scientific skill. There's that scientific word we all love. Still a sucker for a smart counter wrestler. What? Power can take him a long way, but his moves are primitive. Tag team specialist is a weakness. Was trained for tag team and is ill-equipped for the rigors of singles. I like that. That's a smart one. That's one that if I came up with, I'd be proud of it. I like the paint stings got going on here too, because it's kind of like this unique design. It looks like the line is down the middle of his face, which is cool.
And he's jacked.
Yeah, he's jacked as shit here. He's probably as jacked as you're going to find Sting. Steve Simpson from Johannesburg, South Africa.
Strength hair.
Strength hair, indeed. Pretty boy image is his strength. Looks like a rock star.
And if you've also ever seen that video of him in World Class where they showed him on the boat. You remember that video where he's on the boat with a girl?
I just saw one, Chris.
In his bikini tights. He's got another strength
Steve Simpson with the banana hammock. So best bottom. So okay, so well schooled, excellent aerial skills and pretty boy image. His weaknesses is he's too nice. He's too light, which he'd probably be the heaviest guy in most federations now. And then long hair.
Terrible.
Get a haircut, Steve, which is great. They literally say, get a haircut. And then they go over his time. I really like Steve Simpson, just as an aside. I thought he was something to stay with wrestling. Yeah, I think if he stayed with wrestling, he'd have been a bigger star.
Even more of a pretty boy than Steve, too.
Yeah, they looked like, who's that guy? Who sang the final countdown?
Europe was the group, the singer Europe.
Yeah, it was like Twin Europes, like Twin.
Throw in maybe a Leif Garrett as well.
Leif Garrett, John Bon Jovi,
yes, in this era, oh yeah, oh yeah.
that was what they had going. Oh yeah, I love that's a wonderful band. All the white bands. Wow, that sounded racist.
David Coverdale, like White Snake there too at this point.
Yeah. Yeah, White Snake, White Lion, you know what I mean. Okay. Ole Anderson is from Minneapolis. He's a feared opponent. He's methodical. Yeah. And he's an outstanding tag wrestler. So we didn't like that Sting's a tag specialist.
Notice the shirt he's wearing this trainer. That's a Georgia Championship Wrestling shirt. That's fucking awesome.
Oh, yeah, you're right. He's putting up his fists. He's ready to fight. Probably ready to fight Lanny Poffo right next to him. And then his weaknesses are strength, speed, and dusty roads. That's a unique weakness. The single-minded obsession with running Dusty out of wrestling puts limits on his time.
I love that, though, because, I mean, Dusty and Ole's feud lasted years. It went through multiple promotions. But it was always there. I mean, Ole's obsession was always to get rid of Dusty Rhodes.
No doubt. Now, here we go. Here's what the people came for. Lanny Poffo from Downers Grove, Illinois.
His picture was from about 5 years earlier.
Yeah, his picture is not the Leaping Lanny era we remember. Superb agility and gymnastic balance. Former gymnast knows how to get around the ring. Deceptively strong, not as strong as his brother, Randy Savage. Ooh, they never said that on TV. He occasionally overpowers his opponent. He spars extensively and privately with his brother. Oh, wait, with his brother, which has made him a more well-rounded wrestler. All right, I spoke too soon there. Size, trying to bulk up.
Well, you know what that's about. You know, you get the reference there. Remember the magazine they did where they had brother versus brother in the empty Mid-South Coliseum where Lawler was the referee. They did Savage versus Poffo. This is late 84. So it had been in one of the early 85 magazines, and Lawler was the referee. It was the empty arena.
I not only don't know about this, but I've never even heard of this.
It was the same for the magazines. They all take pictures and all that stuff. Oh, yeah. So that's where that's coming from, privately.
That's a pretty cool get for the magazines, though, to have like an exclusive angle that isn't mentioned on TV. Well, that's cool.
If I remember correctly, Lawler's refereeing wearing a Pro's Illustrated shirt.
Of course. Negatives on Lanny Poffo, size.
What size you talking about?
Jesus H. Christ, yes. It's Yes. He also sings a limerick on his Kayfabe Commentaries thing, which if you ever heard Lanny Poffo sing the Once from Once Knew a Man from Nantucket jingle, you never forget that. Once that's in your brain, it's all over. If my knee were a cunt, I would fuck it. These exact words out of him. I was like, oh my god, Lanny, what are you doing? Reverse flip off the buckle is a spectacular but mildly effective, far too dangerous and office backfire. Oh, so there that is. Oh yeah. My god, they'd hate to see wrestling these days. Lax Killer Instinct. Might have something to do with his love for poetry. Alright. Needs to toughen up, especially when he has an edge. There's all that. Turning the page. For the good of wrestling, Scott Hall must shut Colonel DeBeer's mouth. Big Scott Hall hitting the big bulldog here.
That steroid abuser, Scott Hall, according to Colonel DeBeer's.
Oh, what a motherfucker.
Oh,
there's literally
I was going to say, are you going to read the DeBeer's quotes?
There's literally some. I don't want to read anything. There's literally some things written in this magazine, which I can't even say out loud.
You notice they never put an author's name to this article because you know that the author would definitely gotten some shit because, you know, they did this. As in Colonel DeBeer said this stuff. I'll read it because I don't care about. But anyway, this is what the Pro Wrestling Illustrated put in there. And again, this is supposed to be Colonel DeBeer's talking.
Colonel DeBeer's is so imagine us as kids reading this shit. But
on
go
black
ahead.
People. They are neither man nor beast, but something in between. They lack the brains to function in society, and therefore are virtually useless to society. When given any rights at all, they abuse them and ask for more. They are never satisfied. I am not saying that we should eliminate the Negro race, but they should be kept under control, like animals in a zoo. Yeah, who wrote this?
That's like, I mean, holy fuck. Like, when I saw that was even in here, I'm like, okay. It's, and like, he would say similar shit on TV, right?
I don't even think he went this far.
Yeah, this is pretty rough. But it's one of those things where, God, he was an effective heel, though. Like, as a little kid,
Yeah,
and you're a guy, you're like, what a fucking piece of shit prick.
Oh, yeah.
Like, you can't do this. You couldn't have done it then. But at the same time, it's like when they have that asshole on Howard Stern, the KKK
Daniel
guy.
Carver.
I don't know if you watch Howard Stern. Yeah, it's like Daniel Carver, okay? It's this fucking idiot who basically says these horrifying, abrasive, racist things. And it's just like you hear it and you can't believe what you're hearing. But at the same time, they're just such a dislikable human being. But like I literally as you're reading this, I'm like I've got Daniel Carver in my head. I'm like, holy fuck, this is like crazy.
Yeah, it makes you wonder which writer for this magazine had these issues with black people. Obviously somebody did.
Someone may have or someone just may have, you know, known how DeBeer's character
but still,
was.
But still.
Yeah, it's pretty fucking heavy, yeah. But it's, wow. And it's the thing is, it's about Scott Hall. Like, they just basically have him talking about South Africa, the United States. The U.S. started to lose power and respect around the time of the conclusion of the Civil War. Oh, Jesus Christ. Yeah, this is brutal. So he's all over this thing. So then basically they go from all that crazy hate speech onto like this feud with Scott Hall. And this sadly was where I learned wrestling was fake. When he posted Scott Hall when Henning and Hall lost the belts to Doug Summers and Buddy Rose, correct? Yeah. So when dude hit Hall's head on the pub, Hall went down. Our fucking neighbor came over, older guy, and he's like, oh, yeah, look, you could see him pulling out the razor blade, and I had seen a razor blade. And, like, he did kind of see it on the – I was like, you motherfucker. So that was kind of when everything got ruined. Thanks, Colonel DeBeer, you fucking racist. So, Colonel DeBeer's ruined everything. My neighbor, he got the – you know, we'll give him the assist. But, yeah, fuck. Now here's one. This month in the Wrestler, and it's I used to love this where they tell you the other magazines out of the month. And it's got Bobby Heenan, but Matt Bourne and Buzz Sawyer picture about how they're gonna reign supreme. Tell you what, Chris, if they both were complete fucking psychopaths outside the ring and they actually got along with each other, that could have been a fucking real good team, dude.
They were real good. Even with the problems.
Well, yeah, they were really good for that fucking.
They were legit, month, too. Who's going to fight those two guys? No way.
I think they had some really good matches, too, against each other. Introducing the Warlord. Oh, look at this. A controversial Q&A with Colonel Beers. You don't fucking say, really. Wonder how that went. Jesus Christ. How much. Maybe that same writer had a little fucking extra from this article, right? Jesus Christmas. Ted DiBiase's paralyzing fear. I know I will die in the ring. Oh, my God.
Yeah.
Yes. Lost his career in the ring, taking that buckle. Yeah. So look at that. Holy shit. Yeah. This is fucking heavy. The next one, we've got Rick Rude telling Ric Flair, I'm coming to get you. Roddy Piper, the new Roddy Piper, the fans love him. If they look closely, they'll find out they should still hate him. Wow, there you go. Can Magnum TA survive the true test of a man and battle back from failure? Really shit, the timing of this. Watch out, world. Here comes Bam Bam Bigelow. More pressure at your call. Exclusive hot seat interview with Terry Taylor. I got to make sure I look at that. Then Nick Bockwinkel and Stan Hansen square off one-on-one, where they basically put pictures of each other and yell at each other across the magazine. They should have done Ole Anderson, not Lanny Poffa, one of those. Okay, so the next page, Superstar Wrestling Game.
I wanted this game. And,
I didn't ever want it, I don't think. It intrigued me, but there wasn't enough pictures of wrestlers in it. It was too much reading for me as a stupid child.
I was a big reader in this era. So
yeah, I was an avid reader of wrestling magazines. And if you look here,
the stores you could get it, I mean, there's none in Georgia. Pennsylvania, you had Philly, King of Prussia, Pittsburgh, Willow Grove, and Allentown.
Holy shit, yeah. Wow, I could have gone to King of Prussia and at the Valley Forge.
In Valley Forge Mall. Yep.
Holy shit, man. Look at that. There's pictures of the Rockers. I think we went through that earlier. Oh, yeah, I might have ruined it by going through all the Oh, here we go. We'll go to page 55.
I love that picture of Black Bart on 51, though.
Oh, yeah, Black Bart's fucking tremendous. So look at these old magazines, or old tapes. There's a Hulk Hogan tape, Greatest Matches tape, and a WrestleMania highlights tape. Each one of these motherfuckers is $24.
Yes.
$2 in handling. If you want them all, it's a cool $63.95. Greatest Matches, Macho Man beats Tito for the belt. Hammer Valentine and Beefcake against Uncle Elmer and Hillbilly Jim. Greatest Matches indeed. Then we've got Hogan and Orndorff, announced by Monsoon and Jesse. Which sells it for me. And then Bob Backlund against the goddamn Iron Sheik with the Ayatollah Blassie at ringside, which is the title loss. Oh, that's a pretty good tape.
Yeah, but
I like
I just have that. You're looking at these two, three tapes. So they're probably about an hour and a half a tape. So you're looking at about 4.5 hours total in these three tapes for $65.
Chris, read.
45
each
minutes.
Tape runs 40. Even worse. So yeah. I just read it saying
minutes.
It. It's like holy shit.
2 hours 15 minutes.
Okay, so guys, 45 minutes of Uncle Elmer and Hillbilly Jim in a match with Beefcake and Valentine, and it's $24. Now, please, everyone, just sit back and look at your options right now. Just be a little less shitty and just. Appreciate
I'm reading
some of the things out there.
Of this match, and it comes off like one of those YouTube comments. Elmer lifts Valentine 10 feet in the air with a muskrat chokehold. Jim captures Brutus in a grisly bear hug. An interfering luscious Johnny Valiant is turned into a cowering milk sap. Mayhem ensues.
Mm. Holy shit, that is kind of alluring to some. Oh my god, a cowering milk sap. What the fuck is that? See, I don't even know any of these things mean. But the muskrat chokehold, they never call it that. This is bullshit. Yeah, this is I don't know. This is maybe maybe whoever was doing the apartment wrestling had some excess words and adjectives to use. All right, we're gonna flip the page now. We got Mean Gene and Bill Watts flanking one another in photos. Mean Gene is gonna be set up as a fall guy of TNT. Oh no, TNT's canceled. Oh, that sucks. I didn't realize it was canceled that soon. I thought it lasted longer, but I guess not.
There's something here we got to mention. Silo Sam,
known
as Big John Harris, is ready to make his AWA debut. The 7'8", 450-pound wrestler, perhaps best known for his cameo appearance in the motion picture Pee-wee's Big Adventure, will appear mostly in Battle Royal matches. I think I can do really well, said Silo Sam, and then give him an early age. It's going to awfully be tough to throw a guy like as big as me out of the ring.
Silo Sam, find that singles match network. Find this one too, by the way. Big Bubba, not to be confused with Jim Cornette's bodyguard. This is, of course, my main man, superstar Bubba, Uncle Fred Ottman, father of Berkeley, the man. Big Bubba is the new Mid-Southern International Champion, formerly known as Siegfried in Texas All-Star Wrestling. That's not in the magazine. I'm just telling you that. Big Bubba defeated Pat Tanaka in the final in the tournament. Fuck, that would probably be so badass. I wonder if Pat Tanaka took a fucking backdrop from 6'10".
You know he did.
God, Pat Tanaka, man. Oh, there's Spike Johnson,
yes,
by the way.
Yes, it is Spike Johnson.
Spike Johnson, was he a drug dealer? I know.
He was Brian Carr before Brian Carr, I think.
Yeah, I didn't mean to ask it like that, but I've heard allegations allegedly that he may or may not have been brought get candy for the boys. So I don't know. That might not be true.
Could have been.
I've heard that. He sold a lot from Mike Von Erich. Anyway, so Rip Oliver regained the Pacific Northwest belt from Coco Samoa. And he said, I said I was going to do it, and I did it. Oh, good quote there. So then the Fabulous Ones are irate over the NWA U.S. champion held by
Because they're
Koloff
U.S. champion in Florida.
Yep, there's some damn nerve. There you go. We're the U.S. champs. Now look at that. Maybe Steve was supposed to come in. Didn't come in. Interesting. It's funny because as you look at this, when they vacated the belts, fucking Stan Lane and Bobby won them,
well,
I think.
Here's what they did. They changed the name of the belts in Florida. They changed them to the Florida Tag Titles.
Okay. But what I'm saying is, didn't Ivan and Crusher end up vacating the belts and wasn't there a tournament?
No, they won a tournament. For the newly created the belts. See, okay.
You're right.
Basically, the explanation was, you remember the national tag titles have been retired? In January 86, I watched a Starcade. So,
Love
they
those belts.
They said that these were the new national tag titles renamed to U.S. tag titles.
There you go, the national championships. All right, so here we go. We found another page to talk about. It's UWF tournament. We've got Steve Williams, Michael Hayes, Sting, Ted DiBiase, or DiBiase, depending on who you're talking to.
Brett
Roberts, Debussy, One Man Gang, 468 pounds. Jack Victory, the big underdog. Rick Steiner, sick. Missing Link with Dark Journey. Savannah Jack, who I could not pronounce his fucking name to save my life for years when I was younger. Savannah Jack? Bradley.
Savannah Jack.
Butch,
I love it.
Jack, Butch Reed, Jumbo Tuarto. Yes, kids, I got a little smarter, thank God. Badly Roy Brown and Chavo Guerrero also in the tournament. So now we're going to change it over here, and here is we'll go with the results. Arena reports.
And you got to remember, now we're in the era where it's not just WWF results. Pro Wrestling Illustrated for the first 6 years, well, whenever they started doing results, but until the end of 85, early 86, it was all WWF results. Then they went around to all the other promotions, which was pivotal for me. So, yes, we got some good stuff here, I see.
Yeah, well, I'm going to really focus on the undercards. We've got Iron Mike Sharp beating Wildman Jack Armstrong in a WWF show. It's in Los Angeles. It's in California, though. And then you got Billy Jack and Bob Orton with the big double count out. That was probably a really good match. They seem like they'd be good opponents. Misty Blue beat Linda Dallas in Baltimore. God bless her. Downtown Danny Brown defended the belt against George Smith, who I'm guessing would be George Smith. Yeah. The Warlord beat both Thunderfoots. Jim Garvin beat Sam Houston, which had to be the best match on the show.
Well, Tony and Ronnie Garvin
Arn Anderson and Ole Miss Rock and Rolls there. And Dusty Rhodes on there. I still think it might have been pretty damn good. What else do we got here? Hercules Hernandez and Jimmy Jack Funk against the Bulldogs.
How about Mike Jackson working a WF show? There he is in Birmingham.
Yeah, Mike Jackson took the fall to Dangerous Danny Davis there as Mr. X. Cousin Luke beat Steve Lombardi, and Lanny Poffo wrestled Jose Luis Rivera in a babyface wimpy match, which is always. What else we got here? Gurria loses to Kamala. Mr. X and Coco Ware tore it down as usual. Jake the Snake DDT Cousin Luke. Bulldogs against Hercules Hernandez and Jimmy Jack Funk is probably a fucking blast. Piper headlining as a good guy in Buffalo against the Sheik. Yeah. What else we got here?
Got an outlaw show in Knoxville results here, which is I love that.
Yeah, Deke Rivers. Yeah, that's a good name. Beat Kenny Hall.
Yeah, Ron Sexton, Doug Vines, yeah, Izzy Slapowitz.
I was about to say, there's motherfucking Izzy Slapowitz, who we always seeing anywhere in wrestling. Who else you got here? Ken Massey. Gustavo Mendoza, another name you know I had trouble with. Brett Wayne Sawyer, the Bubblegum Kid. Terry Taylor winning the big $50,000 two-ring battle royal at the fairgrounds in Jackson. Terry Taylor pinned the one-man gang. That's a shocker. Savannah Jack, the aforementioned Savannah Jack.
I love it.
Jeff Gaylord. Gamma Singh beat Bob Bradley in Australia. Sal Balomo beat my man AJ Petruzzi. Sega beat Jim Powers. Oh, SD Jones and Paul Roma beat the Moondogs. That's when SD Jones and Paul Roma got this huge push in Australia for some fucking reason. I remember it was in the magazine, and I'm like, okay. What else we got going on here? Hector Guerrero beat Kong of the Barbarian. That's surprising. Man. Look at that. Murdoch and Arn in a tiny little draw is probably fun as shit. That's a good match. What else we got here? Armand Rougeau beat Frankie the Thumper Lane.
It's Armand Rougeau, and Frankie Lane is the guy that wrestled back in the 70s and stuff. He was a Canadian guy, if I'm not mistaken. Well, more of Ontario based, but he was Cowboy Frankie Lane, not Frankie Lancaster.
Oh. Okay. Adrian Adonis beat Cousin Luke. Fabulous Ones beat the Shock Troops in a steel, the big cage match
Shock
there in Gainesville.
Ed the Bull Gantner and Mr. Kareem Muhammad.
Oh, yeah. Kendall Windham destroyed the ninja who might be Great Muda, which is a fucking slight against God. Why would Kendall Windham destroy the Great Muda? But there you go. Barry Windham beat Ron Bass in a bull rope match. Sean Royal, who's fucking awesome, beat Cuban Assassin. Ooh, shit. Look at guys. Hershey. That had been my territory. I was not at this one. Machines beat Bundy and Stud. Man, Andre was always in Hershey. Savage beat Steel. Killer Bees drew with Nikolai and the Sheik and a fucking barn burner. Bob Orton beat Tito Santana. Rougeau's beat Rene Goulet and Jimmy Jack Funk, no doubt, with the Le Bomb D Rougeau, the wonderful finish. Sika beat Tony Gurria. And then Dick the Rebel beat Terry Gibbs, who's a hell of a wrestler, by the way, Terry Gibbs. And Corporal Kirshner beat Iron Mike, who had a girlfriend in Shemokin, so it might have been why he's working in Hershey. There you go, your territory, Knoxville, Tennessee. Wait, yeah, Knoxville, Tennessee.
Well, the road for me, but no, yeah.
You know, yeah, the Bullet and Adrian Street against Robert Fuller and Jimmy Golden. Jerry Stubbs lost to Brad, which had to be fucking exceptional. Debbie Combs beat Miss Linda, not to be confused with Linda Dallas. Wendell Cooley beat Kevin Sullivan by disqualification. Roy Lee Welch beat Tim Horner and Tony Anthony. Tommy Pritchard wrestled to a draw. Yeah, look at all kinds of good shit on this. Oh, here's a good one. MSG, Super Machine, Big Machine, and Hulk Machine beat King Kong Bundy, Big John Studd, and Bobby Heenan. Ted Arcidi and Tony Gurria. I think I've seen that one on a front. Fuck. Yeah, no good. Nick Kaniski beat Steve Lombardi. Sika crushed Lanny Poffo. And the Islanders defeated
Mr. Electricity Steve Regal was on the show beating Jose Luis.
Oh, yeah, Mr. Electricity did have a cup of coffee there, eh? Yeah, he would have been really good if he – I don't know. Oh, my God. Look, Sheik Al-Shad, Chris. Sergeant Slaughter and Sheik Al-Shad. That is, this is literally probably right after they
Rutland,
were in Shemoke.
Vermont. Yeah.
Jules, yeah, Chief Jules Strongbow beat Larry Winters. DC Mad Dog Drake wrestled Eddie Miranda, Tiger Jackson, and Puncho Boy. Wendy Richter had the big women's match with Peggy Lee Reed, who might have been Leather. And then, of course, the Soul Man, Rocky Jones, beat the Masked Executioner. There's that. Now, here we go. All time. Look at this next card, Chris, and tell me what name I couldn't pronounce.
Well, it's misspelled, too. Abudadine.
Yeah. I swear to God, Abudadine would be.
Well, you're saying it like it's spelled, but that's, it's supposed to be spelled A B U D D A D E I D E I N. Abudadine. This is Abugadadian.
Yeah, I call him Abdabgabadabian for like decades. Like, I might have just figured it out now.
Of course,
that's what I'm trying to say.
Curtis,
okay.
Yeah.
Okay, so the Road Warriors beat Rip Olivers and Bruiser Brody, which anytime Brody's in there with the Road Warriors, that's crazy. Slaughter beat the aforementioned Sheik A. Nick Bockwinkle and Henning had the big double count out. Ricky Santana beat Maniac Mike Miller. Coco Samoa beat Vern Seibert, who always had a really good name. Brady Boone beat Joey Jackson. And Scott Doring, Vinny Valentino, had the big draw. Scott Doring was a jack motherfucker. I remember he was thick.
Vern Seibert, of course, would become a big-time tape dealer later on. Yeah.
Would he really?
He supplied us with a lot of Portland stuff that nobody else had because he recorded it. Portland, Vancouver. Stampede, yeah.
Nice.
Hey, Vern had a lot of good shit.
Thanks, Vern Siebert. You're the man. War Memorial, Fort Lauderdale, my favorite. Out of all the shows on this entire fucking La Card, this is the one I would want to go to. Because A, it's a Florida show in the 80s. And B, Barry goddamn Windham beat Ron Bass to capture the big $25,000 20-man two-ring battle royal. Holy shit. Luger over Kareem Muhammad, four-star classic. Barry Windham beat Kendo Nagasaki. Tyree Pride and Stan Lane beat the Cuban Assassin and Butch Miller. This might have been when Steve got out of wrestling.
I'm guessing probably something like maybe they got hurt in the battle royal or something. Or I mean, if that was first or... Maybe just him. And, well, let's see. Luke's not there wrestling either. So Kern and Luke may be hurt or something.
Oh, yeah. You could be right. Sean Royal beat the Ninja. Holy fuck. Sean Royal beat the Great Muta, dude. Maybe that's why Sean Royal got that New Japan tour in 94. Maybe Muta won in his win back.
Maybe.
How about that shit? Mark Starr beat Johnny B. Good. See, this is why we do this show, to come up with stuff like that, because might be the reason. Ontario, we got Jacques and Raymond beating Brett and Jim. Bret Hart spelled wrong. Not a star yet, apparently. Iron Sheik pinned Seviafi. Corporal Mike Kirshner beat Nikolai Volkov. RCD beat Iron Mike Sharp. Candy Perdue. Interesting. Beat Judy Martin. Tony Parisi. Wow, there you go. The master of the big butt drop off the top. Beat Steve Lombardi. And Rene Goulet beat Bob Marcus. Whoever that was. Huh. All right, final page. Oh, wait, no, second to final page. Okay, Robert Gibson, Broken Ribs, and the Wrestling Inquirer.
That's where the hard news was at in this magazine.
Oh, yeah. WWF and World Class joined forces. This is what we discussed earlier with George Scott. Wow, it's right here in plain ink, too. This is a significant deal for us, official George Scott, formerly WWF. Yeah. This lasted 1.5 shows, I think, and that was it. Andre the Giant in England getting
filming,
drunk probably. What's going on? Oh, okay, yeah. They didn't say it here, but you're right. That would have been what it was. Interesting. Then we got Henning declaring war on Gagne. That's an evergreen fucking headline, as it could have been in the 70s, 60s, or fucking 80s.
Yeah, but the thing is that he doesn't. I mean, this isn't really his heel turn yet. He doesn't. He attacks Greg in this match, but it's still a babyface until the next year.
Oh, yeah, you're right. So he punches him with the thing. Yeah, you're weird. Right. Yeah, yeah. Yeah, that is kind of weird. Dude, Ali Khan. I haven't thought of the name Ali Khan in years.
Who worked in Continental's Boomerang Lynch. Yeah.
Oh, yeah? I thought his name was really Ali Khan. He was bald.
Yeah, he played football with Greg Gagne in Wyoming.
Brother, you know so much. I'm so impressed with you by the show. That's insane. Ali Khan, fucking, that's great. Wyoming football.
Yeah, he was a member,
now we got around
the Continental in 85-86 is Boomer H. Lynch.
See, I got to go look up Ali Khan because I believed the great late. Oh God, what the fuck his name?
Who's my?
No, the guy that was the announcer, Larry Nelson. I believe. And he's like from Baghdad, Iraq. Ali Khan. Who was the blaster?
Gary Lindgren. He was a guy that was a Vern trainee in the late 70s, early 80s. He suffered this like big injury, and he didn't wrestle for 5 years, and then comes back as a blaster.
Do you think he sold his arm gimmick to Steve DeSalvo?
He might have. I mean, Steve was in NWA's Billy Jack Strong, so maybe he gave it to him.
I swear to God, I think that's what happened. This has to be the first time that was ever discussed, by the way, but I swear to God. I think there's something to it now that I just mentioned it. Yeah, no doubt. Like when the Minotaur had the big arm, because I was thinking, well, who else ever had the big arm thing? As you said his name, I'm like, oh, well, Steve DeSalvo was the Minotaur had it too. But then I'm like, oh shit, Billy Jack Strong was there when the blaster ran through the wall. Could be, guys. If you're nerdy, you're loving this conversation. All right, so around the globe, Tiger Mask and Ricky Choshu are the two top contenders for Ric Flair's belt. There's that. I have planned strategy to defeat Flair.
This is Misawa. Misawa Tiger Mask.
Yes. Good call. Montreal, Quebec. Former AWA World Champion Rick Martel has announced that he, Tom Zink, and Dino Bravo have decided to sign with the WWF. What? Zink and Martel have agreed to work as a tag team and go after the British Bulldogs. Bullshit. Bravo, who will be managed by Johnny V, added that the world title from Hogan is a high priority. Nice. That worked out pretty good.
Oh, my God. I just read the last one here. Can I read this?
You go right ahead,
Memphis,
my friend.
Tennessee. The team of Sato and Goto is going to Rampage. They broke Paul Diamond's leg. And then after getting reprimanded by Mid-Southern promoter, and there's Mid-Southern again, Eddie Marlin, he injured his leg. Toji Omoto, manager of Sato and Goto, said Jerry Lawler's limbs are the next target. And now these are supposedly direct quotes from Tojo Yamamoto. Soon, nobody in Mid-Southern Legion has any rags left, unquote. Said Yamamoto. We will injure them and put in hospital.
Dude,
God.
So fucking crazy. It literally says rags ref. Holy
Mid-Southern
shit.
Mid-Southern Legion.
PWI in 86 is out of control. We're flipping it now to the last page. We've got a panel of Dark Journey, Paul Ellering, Rick Rude,
Dark
and
Journey's
Nick Bockwinkel.
Here, so 80s.
Yes, Dark Journey is the prototypical 80s chick right here. She says that Missy Hyatt, John Tatum, and Eddie Gilbert are a bunch of fools fighting amongst themselves like three maniacs. She brought in the missing link from the nudist to get rid of the Hyatt Incorporated. But it looks like that airhead is going to do it all by herself. I think right now I might sit back and watch Tatum and Gilbert fight over that witch. Imagine grown men arguing over a woman like her. Makes me really wonder about men. Although I'm not sure that's what I'd call Gilbert and Tatum. Oh, good promo. There are a couple of overgrown children who constantly need their egos fulfilled. What a joke. Good job, Dark Journey. That's pretty good. I enjoyed that one. Paul Ellering, I'm coming out right now to say that the Road Warriors have declared war on Jim Cornette and Midnight Express. Animal and Hawk are under orders to do anything under their power to dismantle these three individuals, no matter what it takes. Cornette has no place in a wrestling ring, especially as long as he's carrying that goddamn rocket. It doesn't say that. The Rock and Roll Express better move aside, because they're ours. I'm currently devising a master plan to rid professional wrestling of these three miscreants. Great word. The task will be completed. Very good. Paul Ellering. Miscreants. All right. So we've got fools and miscreants. And now the ravishing one is here, baby. And I'm here to say, and already doesn't sound like him, all you wrestlers in the NWA better just clear out because there's going to be trouble here. Dusty Rhodes, you disgraceful tub. Look at your body. Look at this body. Look at what you'd love to have but never can because you just don't have the strength. You don't have the desire. Magnum TA, you can never match up to me. That would have been a great match, by the way. You've proven that you're nothing but a coward. Just a matter of time. Just a matter of time, folks, before I have that NWA belt around my waist. My pretty waist. And you all be bowing down to Rick Rude. Dude, Magnum and Rude have been sick. Battle of the mustache.
I know, yeah.
All right. Closing it out with old Bach. Nick Bockwinkel. It's been 4 months, wrestling fans, and the AWA world title is still mine. I told everyone back in June that I would have won the belt even if Hansen did show up. And the way I've wrestled since just proves my point. Big wins over Ali Khan. I've taken on every challenger from all corners of the globe, and I've turned them all aside. They'll never get this belt for me. I've got strength and skill and speed on my side. I'm not even reading correctly. And it's just an unbeatable combination. Come on, Hansen, wherever you are. Show me you're a man. Come back after the title. You wouldn't stand a chance. The match never happened. But there you go, guys. The Pro Wrestling Illustrated from February 1987. A classic issue. Chock full of all kinds of one-liners, for sure.
Absolutely, yeah. The writing in this stuff is something else. I'll tell you. What a Pro's Illustrated.
Yeah, I don't know if we'll ever top that Colonel De Beers quote.
Or the Tojo stuff. They would actually spell out regs and reft.
Yeah, that too. It's just they were out to lunch on this issue. They probably got yelled at by Apter immediately. Well, that's another one down, guys.
Yeah.
Good Lord. We're going to get another one done this weekend. I'm calling it. I'm gonna call my shot here. Sometimes I dilly-dally and don't get around doing the shows, but I think I have this weekend maybe a little bit of time, so we'll try to knock another one out because I just so much. So if we get more of these out,
it'll be my turn this time. So we'll have to see what kind of issue I will pick out here. Let's see. We pretty much have a state. Let's see. We've done 85. We've done 86. Yeah, 87. The A7 maybe twice now? So,
yeah, I think right, in 87. So,
we'll definitely, we'll try to, I'll see what I can come up with. So it could be earlier, it could be later. Yeah.
Earlier, later 80s, yeah.
I think maybe an 89 issue may be in store. We haven't done 89 yet.
Hmm. Oh, that's a great fucking year.
So we'll look at that. Well, nothing's for certain, so, but we'll come up with something.
Yes, absolutely. Well, I guess, yeah, it's my job here to sign off. I forgot about this. This is why I never run the show. So, that's another one down, guys, for the wonderful Chris Zellner out of Atlanta. This is Rob from PA signing off. We'll catch you sooner than later here on Cover to Cover, your favorite wrestling magazine podcast.
So long from the Peach State of Georgia.